I feel like we're jinxed. Every first episode of the year, something breaks. Remember last year, the very first episode, the background fell down. Still have that damaged skirting board.
Oh, it did too. Like something huge just happened. But yeah, the microphone stand is a bit broken.
The Rode PSA 1 boom arm has broken. It is pretty old. I don't know why it snapped. I don't know. I don't feel like I've gotten stronger over the last sort of Christmas break that we've been on. But we're back live. Episode 33 now. Had a little bit of a little hiatus.
We did. A little holiday. A little podcast holiday.
More of a break than a holiday.
Yeah, that's true. We didn't really go anywhere. But yeah, we just had a break from chatting on here. We didn't have a break from chatting with each other. It's not like we held off all conversations.
Sometimes I think we should.
Just have that little break here and there. Yeah. Well, that's when I'm at work, so.
The opposite of a pod. Just yeah. Complete silence. But yeah, we're back. It's 2022 now, another year. I think everyone's in that optimistic sort of New Year resolution mode. I don't know if we really do that.
Yeah, well, we did set ourselves some goals, but it's more of like aspirations, I think, that we have for the year. But we're not
public
100%,
about it.
Not public about it, but we're just like not hugely optimistic about it. We're like, this is what we need to achieve this year. These are like the realistic way to achieve it. And just say if, you know, another lockdown happens or whatever's going to happen this year, like we know that the goals that we've chosen are pretty solid in a way. Yeah, sustainable, mm-hmm. Which is what we're looking for this year.
COVID proof. That's the goal, is to create COVID proof, recession proof. Businesses somehow, some way, but that's the whole goal of this pod. So if you're new here, thanks for tuning in. My name's Drew. This is Sarah. We should probably do like a new introduction. It's a new year. Probably got some new listeners coming by. So give a little spiel about the show. This episode or this podcast rather is called "Look, Mum, I'm Hustling," and I guess it's sort of just about it's sort of an evolving concept to a degree, but overall the overarching message is about. Finding your own way, whether that be in business or life or just sort of hustling your way through life. And that can be through business or just art or culture or many, many ways. But we're sort of here to break down different weekly topics that we're interested in that sort of world. And we'll get guests and stuff on throughout the year. But we're pretty excited to get back into it finally.
Yeah, 100%. Like I'm really looking forward to this year with... Like you were saying, last year we were just experimenting with the pod in general. We, you know, we're just seeing how we could maintain not only doing it like every 2 weeks, how we could maintain it doing weekly, like the type of topics we want to discuss, what we're both interested in enough to be able to, I guess, talk about it more than like 30 seconds each as well, which is a challenge within itself because like something may seem cool, but it's just like a one-liner cool thing to talk about. You're like, how can I talk about this for like... you know, 30 minutes, 40 minutes.
Yep.
And I just really enjoy how the pod is evolving and just how we want to not even talk about more current events, but just be more specific in what we're talking about, be a little bit more knowledgeable behind it. Not that we're complete dumbasses or anything.
The whole goal is to just like, I don't know, just have conversations, level up, get some different worldviews, whether from us researching or from the guests that we get on.
Yeah.
Just to just expand our knowledge a little bit because, you know, life can get busy at work, you're 9 to 5, I'm self-employed. You don't really have that much time to think outside the box, really tap into what's going on. So a little bit of news, a little bit of business, a little bit of guests, a little bit of fun. A little bit of coffee, probably a lot of coffee.
100%, a lot of coffee. For those that are possibly new here, you'll find out throughout the many episodes how much we love our coffee and pretty much mention it at least once per episode.
So yeah, pretty exciting for the new year. I think we'll get a new set design. I think around episode 50, we're going to do a rehaul of, not sure if it's going to be this room or
we'll Marc Maron style and have it in a garage or something. Yeah.
Beautiful Sydney summer heat. Radiating through one of the lights went out. No worries. Yeah. All good. It's everything's failing. Again, it's the first one of the year. It's
you know what? You get everything bad out in the first one and then it's just cruising from here on out. Do we need to fix a light? Is it all right?
It's still recording, so let's just roll with it.
Okay.
We've already had a bit of a nightmare morning, but that's how we roll.
I know.
We try to anyway.
Yeah.
All right. So today we're going to run through some current affairs and topics that we're kind of interested in locally in terms of Sydney and Australia and some more sort of global reaching topics and articles that may impact a lot of other people.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be an interesting mix of conversation this week. What do you think?
I think so. Like we try to, like we were saying before, just pick things that we're interested in, but we feel like could shine a little bit of a light on. Just our take is a little bit different. You might be able to take away something from it as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we've I like the ones that we picked out, some of them. Curated a nice little list here.
All right, so to kick off the year, we're going to touch into top five customer experience trends of 2022. I know we're some small business operators. We've both worked in customer experience or customer service and stuff for a while now. So it'd be interesting to see the way COVID and stuff is impacting the way that businesses are looking to sort of retain and give value to their customers.
Yeah.
So that should be interesting. Tying into that, we're also going to look at artificial intelligence as being your next drive-through operator. So your Maccas, KFC run. We don't really go to them too much, but they might all be AI robots very, very soon. So pay attention to that. We have waste collection could grind to a halt as COVID shortages force delays. So everyone's kind of sick now with Omicron.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of shortages in all industries. Yeah. So it can have a lot of far-reaching impacts, again, everywhere, all sectors of business and culture and stuff. Tying into that, we have climate crisis. The last 7 years have been the hottest on record, 2021 data.
That's a scary, scary fact.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not fun to hear. So it'd be interesting. What was interesting going through some of the facts in that, and like a lot of countries are recording it. Yeah.
Especially with that super volcano. I don't know if it was a super volcano, but a gigantic volcano just outside of Tonga has gone off just this morning. So quite early developing news, a lot of tsunami flood warnings. From many, many countries. I know here in Australia, the whole East Coast is sort of waiting for some more news coming out. So we'll touch on that. Hillsong, what are you guys up to?
Oh,
Hillsong,
man,
have had a gigantic youth camp.
For those that are watching, air quotations, youth camp.
Yeah, and also gigantic, air quotes. Hillsong escapes fine after denying youth camp with dancing and singing was a festival. So they're in a bit of strife at the moment. You know, they get off scot-free every time anyway. But yeah, they've had some sort of a music festival and no fines for them. So we'll touch on that and the sort of hypocrisies surrounding that with all the COVID news at the moment. And to lighten things up, we'll talk about Wordle. I don't know if you know what Wordle is. It's like a very popular like app or game on Twitter at the moment, like a text-based game. Alleged Wordle copycats criticized for monetizing free games. So we've had some copycats in there. Trying to make some money off someone else's hard work. Apparently, allegedly.
Allegedly, we'll so find rude. Out. Very
and to
rude.
Wrap things up, we have a little good news article that we'll just share at the end. We won't touch too much into that right now,
it's
right?
Super cute, yeah.
All right, so we'll kick things off. Top five customer experience trends for 2022. How do you work in retail?
I do.
We're not going to go into too much detail about that, but dealing with customers face-to-face, like I deal with them all through messaging and stuff, so it's not, you know, a direct line of communication. During the whole COVID situation and how you see things moving in the next 3 to 5 years, before we get into some of the main points, what are you seeing on the front? I shouldn't say frontline.
In my experience,
In your own experience, how you're finding that our customers, is there any new thing that customers are expecting from retail or business?
Probably like the hugest thing is, I think online shopping is still huge. Usually it drops down after Christmas time, but it's still keeping that momentum because our store does online and like physical retail as well. So like during lockdown, the online stuff pretty much saved the whole entire company. If it wasn't for the online business, it would have failed dramatically. And that, you know, contactless click and collect options, thinking outside the square with like same day deliveries and all that kind of stuff was pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. But now people are still, yes, they're coming in, but it's a very mixed bag. You do have like waves of people that are, you know, just coming in purposefully, especially around, I guess, when you have higher cases and stuff. So the people that are actually coming out just need to buy stuff rather than just the people that are browsing or having a look. You tend to get those when, you know, everything's a little bit nicer, less cases, that kind of thing. So it's COVID really
is the driving force.
Yeah. Like the amount of like foot traffic momentum that you do get in the stores or even just in shopping centers in general. Like you notice that in combination with like after Christmas trade and stuff, it's pretty quiet at the moment. This whole week's been very, very quiet, but it's been the highest in cases history ever as well.
Ever. Interesting. So this article, I guess, would be touching on the US market primarily because that's where all the biggest entrepreneurs and global brands are sort of located. So I feel like we're a few years behind. So all that stuff that's been implemented here in Australia during the COVID crisis, the stuff that was already implemented overseas 3, 4, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So I feel like a lot of this stuff, although it's interesting to find out now, it's also not going to really take off in terms of bricks and mortar type situations
mm-hmm.
Anytime soon. So let's roll into it. As we head into 2022, brands have a... Sorry, let me get my sip of coffee because I'm reading direct quotes here and I don't want to, you know.
No, yeah, we're actually not being professional, but we're giving some, you know, info.
Take two. As we head into 2022, brands face a tipping point with changed customers and expectations. 50% of global customers say the pandemic caused them to rethink their purpose and reevaluate what's important in life. It's never been more critical to understand what's coming down the pipeline to create an effective customer experience. Here are five customer experience trends to look for in 2022. So kicking things off, we have e-commerce booms and evolves. Customers are buying more through apps like WhatsApp and other channels. So it's basically, I was looking into this a little bit, it's basically known as conversational commerce, and it's just a way of having a direct line of contact from brand to customer. And it's not like there's a customer service rep at the other end the entire time. A lot of the time it is chatbots and things. But it's basically live chat, messaging, getting problem solving and questions resolved via apps and stuff, which is really good if you're the business because you can, you know, convert those confused leads if a customer's unsure about what they can gain from the experience or they're uncertain about whether to buy your product or service. As sort of the last final push to actually close that lead. And from the customer point of view, it's sort of just good because you're getting direct line of contact, right? Like
yeah.
You feel important.
Yeah, 100%. I actually had to Google what conversational commerce was because I'm like, what does that mean? But after reading through, I'm like, makes sense. Like just that what people really are after now is not just the physical product itself, but they want to feel like some sort of connection to the brand or to the item that they're buying. And with that bot aspect or with those instant replies that people get, that's more of like you feel connected, you feel like they care about you, it creates value. And the more value as a company that you create for someone, the more retention you're going to get long term.
And word of mouth as well. I know just dealing with some current stuff at the moment, the live chat option is always really good if you're... You hit that help tab and there's no live chat option. You're like, man, I don't want to sit on the phone. But when that live chat's there and you can tell it's a real person responding to you, it definitely, it makes you feel like the problem's going to get solved sooner rather than later,
mm-hmm.
Which is a huge important selling point for any business for sure.
Yeah, that customer service aspect or that customer support is so essential now. Like I remember probably like 5 years ago, whether it's online, over the phone, like there was just no emphasis on that customer service support. You'd have to go into like a physical building just to be able to talk to someone, just to be able to get the answers that you want. But it's only, not only, but yeah, in the last couple of years, they've really put an emphasis on those external help resources just so people can get, I guess, unlimited access or like 24/7 access to the help that they need rather than having to wait to 9 to 5 to see someone or to talk to someone. It's really interesting that having or needing that unlimited access is like such a huge part of like a selling point to someone, you know, 24/7 support, that kind of thing.
It depends on how good they are, though, right? Like the artificial intelligence and a lot of them is just very just coordinated responses and they don't really help you that much. But when they get progressively better year after year, you know, they're going to solve your problem straight away. Like you just, they know what you're thinking before you do, basically.
Yeah, 100%. It's just... It's so weird how much they're going to learn about us in like a couple of years' time. They're just going to know what it is that we need straight away.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty interesting.
And they'll probably be hitting us up in the messages before we even contact them. They're like,
yeah.
I know you know how you're getting like ads now in the feed?
It's yes.
Like, I've seen you wanted a Roomba. I've been looking at Roombas or robotic vacuum cleaners for the house. Instead of just popping up a sponsored ad in the feed, you're just going to get direct messages soon.
Yeah.
It's going to be a nightmare.
Just like text messages. It's going to be so weird.
Yeah.
But that's like where everything's shifting. Like if you don't have a digital space or a digital platform or a digital connection, you're really, really going to be left behind because that's just where everything's going. Like if you don't have an online, like if you're a business and you sell products and don't have like an e-commerce platform, it's really going to, I don't know, it's just one less opportunity you're missing out on.
It's true.
Mm.
It is true. Second little topic of this article says that instant gratification and online customers want a response within 5 minutes or less. So it ties into the similar sort of chatbot thing.
Mm-hmm.
Time is money. Obviously, people on both ends of the transaction know that, the business and the buyer.
Yeah, 100%.
So, yeah, instant gratification. You need a quick response, quick resolution.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's just going to fuel word of mouth.
Yeah.
Amongst peers and stuff of the buyer.
Well, it's even something like, it's so random, but I bought, like, we have a percolator coffee machine, everybody. Got a percolator and I had to order some coffee parts for it. As soon as I placed the order, not completely annoying, but it was like, hey, thank you for purchasing. You got that instant thank you straight away as soon as you got it. Then you got payment confirmation. So another notification from this company. And then because I think I've ordered something from them before, they'd be like, oh, looks like you're a regular. Here's blah, blah, blah. Like, it's just that data that they're saving is just, and with those instant responses, it just puts them front of mind. So I guess when I need something coffee next related, I'm going to go to that same website.
Yeah, that's the thing. They want you, ideally, you just want to bombard them so you're front of mind. So when you have X problem and X brand has been in your face every month saying they're the leaders in that field or for that product, they're front of mind. That's the whole idea of just, you know, spamming the hell out of the customers.
Yeah, yeah, it's
pretty- can work in your favor if you're the business, but if you're just a lonely dude like me or a lonely gal like you scrolling the feed can become quite annoying. But another like way of doing instant gratification is fast postage, which in America is possible due to with Amazon. Amazon. Really struggling.
Ooh, you need to take another sip of coffee. Amazon. Do you mean with Amazon?
Amazon, yeah.
Yeah, with the drones and everything.
Do they do the drones yet?
I don't know if that was just like a gimmick or not. But
I think it's coming.
Yeah, but like the same day deliveries that they have.
Yeah. Again, it's just if you can give value to the customer in speed, you're going to love that. Mm. Not actual speed. You don't need to give them.
No, but just say if you, it's just one of those, and that's where like a lot of those shopping addictions and stuff can tie in as well. Like you buy something and you have that instant gratification straight away. It same goes to, you know, the whole social media aspect of having that instant like, you know, just instant that regret. Instant regret. Yeah. Instant compliment. Like it's just little things like that, having that instant serotonin boost, saying, yes, 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 do this again. Yeah, it's pretty interesting, like how quick we now are expecting everything, whether it's fast internet, fast TV shows, like it's, you know, we want to get paid straight away, little things like that. It's just where our patience for waiting, it seems, as a society is growing less and less.
I agree. In addition to that, we have another very important topic or area to focus on in the new year and moving forward for this decade, Earth Talk. Customers want to know the environmental impact of what they're buying. So 91% of customers expect companies to be socially and environmentally responsible. It's no longer enough for brands to claim to be sustainable. They must be transparent. Fashion label Rebecca Minkoff uses an AI-powered transparency tool that shows exactly how much water and material it takes to make each item compared to similar products. So you can literally see this used 20% less water, 20% less cotton from X country, from whatever country. I'm using a lot of X's in this pod.
No, but it makes sense. Like so many, whether you're a big business or a small business, are moving in that direction. Like whether you just no longer have the plastic bags and you just use the reusable ones, banning straws and having like paper straws, little things like that can tie into, you know, people wanting to go back to that brand or go back to that business. Even like bigger corporations are using things like carbon offset, so people have that better feeling of like whether it's, you know, going to that company or investing in that company. Even things like some cryptocurrencies are using different types of carbon offsets to, you know, promote people to buy their stuff, really.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of, been a wave of that in the last probably decade, I would say. But I guess the common theme for this article, the main point they're trying to convey is that transparency is key. Anyone can label this t-shirt's sustainable. This product is sustainable without proof or validation of some sort. Doesn't go very far. That's the whole, like you said, with like crypto, there's an element of blockchain and verifiability.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty sure that's a word. that you can check that the company has sourced this material. Like, for example, like this is using an AI transparency tool, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing to implement that. It's another thing to like build the software or the technology to actually allow people to use the data to prove its transparency. There's a whole, you know, there'd be a whole range of products and services available to be invented or created just in terms of the tools required to show the value to the customer. Yeah. So that's pretty interesting. But on the blockchain, let's say companies start using Bitcoin to transact for goods, then you can show 100 kilos of this cotton from this country on the blockchain. Here it is. This is all provable. And then it just runs through some sort of filter or infographic onto the website for the customer to see, ah, oh, this is all like 100% legit. It's the same as like the farms and the way they kill animals and stuff. And they say mm-hmm. it's organic. A lot of the time, there's not a lot of proof behind that. You let us pay for like a label to slap on the box yeah. or the product. So it's really about just being able to prove the transparency. It's just not enough just to say it anymore.
Yeah.
That's the really interesting part.
No, that makes sense because with this day and age, people like to know more. Like I was saying before, people want to be connected to the brand and stuff they're buying. And the easiest way to do that, or not easiest way, like one of the more common ways, like you're saying, is being transparent and being open about how you fully run your corporation.
Mm-hmm.
Something as simple as like, who are the people that are in that company? You know, they have an about with like photos and descriptions and things like that, where, you know, back in the day, you would have no idea who would be the head of, you know, such and such. Like they have that personal touch to it. So they try to be transparent. This is all the things that we're doing, all the things that we're creating. But yeah, I totally agree. They're definitely moving more in that direction of just being open about who they are and how they operate.
Which is going to drive the cost up. They're going to have to recover, like let's say Nike. We all know that, you know, a lot of these companies, you have mega factories in China and stuff. A lot of the, I don't know if it's Nike specifically, but I imagine most of the huge clothing producers have thousands and thousands of staff that just get very poor wage or have poor life conditions. So yeah, proving that would be an interesting aspect as well. It just allows the user or the user or the buyer or the consumer yeah. To pick a company that aligns with their values a little bit easier. But yeah, that I think that's going to all tie in with the blockchain by the sounds of it. Give me one second. I'll put the aircon on. Yeah, very hot.
Of course.
Keep talking.
Yeah. But yeah, like it is so interesting that's what consumers are after. And even thinking about myself as a consumer, I know when I'm looking for whether it's a new brand or a new product, I kind of do a deep dive and be like, all right, so who's actually their parent company? You know, do they have other good brands underneath that parent company, or they just have like one sort of organic on one on there just to show that they're semi-eco? Like it's, yeah, a lot of things like that. Even as myself as a consumer, I do those things. Like yeah. That's what I want out of a brand as well.
It really comes down to just how there's going to be, doesn't have to be, but ideally there's going to be one platform or website that is the main go-to for comparing. You know how there's like finder.com, you can mm-hmm. compare gas providers and stuff like that. Yeah. If you can have some sort of simple interface that's a commonly, like a household name or mm-hmm. website, that would be the go. Again, that's quite specific to different products, but
yeah.
Yeah, transparency in terms of environmental impact, very important. Also mm-hmm. very important, moving beyond products and service to... God damn, man, maybe you should have hosted this one. Moving beyond products and services to more God damn, yeah. This is not a good day for a podcast. Moving to experiential e-commerce.
Yeah.
So just the brands providing more of an... rather than just the product and service... providing some sort of value or experience tied to that,
mm-hmm.
Which I guess is designed to create like a memory or a fond experience. Yeah. experience. You take over this one because yeah. I'm struggling here.
No, that's all right. But that makes sense. So something, for example, like if you're going furniture shopping, right?
Yeah.
So something that website or that company may provide will be like a free like digital or AR augmented reality sort of platform or space for you to like put your furniture in, take photos of your apartment, see what it's going to look like. So that's one helpful aspect of them to, I guess, stay on your website, shop with you.
Close the deal.
Yeah, exactly. Because you can help visualize, I guess, where your furniture is going to go.
We did that ages ago with IKEA. That was at yep. the... when we lived in Ryde, that was 5-6 years ago.
100%. We had a really small, like downgrading from like a 2-bedroom to like a 1-bedroom apartment. It was really, really small. And we're like, how are we going to fit this massive couch in here? Got all the dimensions and stuff. And it just like fit perfectly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think things like we're also reading more about smart home devices and like wearables. Mm-hmm. I think there's an experience layer to that as well, other than just having clothing, having some sort of device or something attached to it that creates an experience, or even the shopping experience itself. I know like Nipsey Hussle, one of my favorite rappers, RIP, back in the day, his shop, Marathon, I think it was pretty sure it's called, in LA,
mm-hmm.
you go in there and have basically, I'm not sure if it was QR codes or some sort of NFC technology
yeah.
where you could like tap an item and you could watch a video clip or something, but it was only available in store. So just like another element of providing experience
yeah.
sort of exclusive content
mm-hmm.
Before or after or during the actual transaction. So that's an interesting kind of concept.
Yeah, and it sort of ties into like places sort of like, oh, yeah, another one is IKEA, for example. So instead of just having like 5,000 couches in a row for you to choose from, they've got little rooms set up so you can really see what that space looks like. So you can sit in there and see what, you know, that particular furniture will like. They've got inspo everywhere on how you can design your home, how you can make it better, how you can make more efficient. So not only are they like a retail space you can shop in, but they're also like a architectural inspiration, like that kind of thing, just that immersive experience. So whether you're doing it physically walking through a store or via, you know, augmented reality or even like through VR as well, like people can shop that way. Like it's pretty interesting that that's only just, it's still not super common.
Yeah. It's kind of like how you're going to implement it digitally.
Mm.
In person, it's easy. You play some music or you give off a smell. Like you got senses that you can tap into in the physical realm.
Yeah.
The digital world's tricky. Like what can you offer? Like some exclusive content, some access to something, whether like I know via an NFT or exclusivity.
That instant gratification type thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just a note here that I wrote was like most brands, most big brands, if they're thinking about, you know, growing and maintaining their level of the position in the industry, they want to focus on their USP, their unique selling point, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it might, like IKEA is a good example, but their unique selling point is what? You can go there and you can experience the whole thing.
Yeah.
But in terms of a singular item, there's no experience for that singular item.
No.
Like it's sort of, it has to apply to an environment in that case.
Like an ecosystem.
So what if the unique selling point turns into like a unique product experience, like a UPE? I made the term up. Unique product experience, right?
Yeah.
Where you're focusing on not your unique selling point, but the unique experience provided for the product.
Right. So pretty much the value you get from having that product.
Yeah. So you're almost putting in equal amount of effort and concentration
mm-hmm.
in terms of selling the product as well as delivering on the experience.
Yeah. Well, that ties into like companies like Apple. They really thrive on that, creating that experience rather than that product. So they, you know, how you feel about it, what you get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Companies like that really emphasize that experience aspect.
All right. Moving on to the last point of this one. This one article is bots are going to help staffing shortages. Robots are going to take over human tasks. So staffing shortages and supply chain issues show no sign of slowing down. The lack of human employees has moved businesses towards robotic technology. For the last 9 months of 2021, North American companies ordered a record 29,000 robots, many of which perform frontline tasks traditionally done by humans. So the robots will be taking over all the low-level jobs.
I mean, from a business point of view, it makes sense because, yes, it might be a higher buy-in, but long-term-wise, it's going to be very, very cost-effective. You know, there's things like HR, like injuries, all that kind of thing, like safety aspects.
Just gone.
Yeah. Like, it's just gone. All that risk, just gone. Like, you've got this automated machines, but then again, you've got all these people that have these jobs left out. Like, what are they going to do? Like, what's with all these technologies being created to help improve the daily lives of everyday humans, what are the everyday humans going to do?
Yeah. It's an interesting point. In terms of the liability aspect and like OH&S or whatever, if you have 20 robots running around the store instead of 20 staff.
Yeah. No one's going to get sick and get COVID and have to quarantine.
Well, that as well as if something happens to a human, what can happen? Any number of injuries. You might have to, I don't know, in terms of like going through HR and dealing with work, what's the work cover and everything like that.
Yeah, like if you injure yourself,
the company doesn't know where they're at. It could cost a lot of money. Whereas if it's a robot, it's like, okay, we can just replace this robot for $5,000. Like they know what they're in for if something crumbles or gets destroyed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting. There'd be robots going everywhere, but the concern, I guess, would be all these low-level jobs are going to be taken away. I know when I started working at 15 at Woolies packing shelves, all those jobs are going to be gone. How hard is it going to be for a robot with extendable arms to just walk past, see an empty shelf, fill it with the product required?
Yeah.
Because it knows the algorithm of how many of this product sell per week and how fast it has to be restocked. They can just literally just have it a perfect amount stocked at all times almost.
Well, if you have like a whole bunch of sensors in the shelves, it lets you know when a particular stock is running low. Mm-hmm. You know, they just have to go up and scan it and be like, oh, sweet, that's what you need. Go through, fill it up and you're done. I mean, they've already got the self-checkouts. We've like, that's
the,
one
we've
thing.
We've got those robots at the local Woolies that just have just cleaner robots that yeah. should just go around and say mm-hmm. move out of the way. There's a spill on the floor.
I think it scans for other stuff as well, like maybe pricing. Things. You suggested it actually scans for low shelves, like it's taking photos as well.
It would make sense to.
Yeah.
If it's just driving down the aisle, how hard would it be to add a camera either side?
And either, just analog empty gaps.
Two on either side just to scan up and down. Like it'd be an all-in-one robot. You'd just have one walking, cleaning mm-hmm. down every aisle. Scanning the shelves and then a different type of robot that comes out with some sort of pallet technology involved.
Yeah. Next
but that's,
level.
That's just Woolworths though. But like yeah. we talked about, we're going to talk up next about Macca's drive through.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to do?
Like I was just thinking every next job. Level. Yeah. For Woolies, like the robot arm would come out of the roof. Everything comes out of the roof and goes down, fills the shelves, comes back up. Like it's all. Yeah, or automated.
All right, we'll roll into the next topic or the next article. So pretty much ties straight in.
It
so
does. Good segue.
Artificial intelligence may make ordering food through a talking box easier, faster, and more accurate. We all know how easy it is to order through one of those Macca's drive-thrus.
I said a large chip.
What is the percentage of the incorrect orders, I wonder? Probably like 10%, right?
It would have to be human fault. I think I was reading the accuracy rate is like 95%.
For these?
Yeah.
For the robots? Yeah. So Checkers and Rally are joining McDonald's on the list of fast food restaurants that are testing voice ordering bots in their drive-thrus. The AI voice assistant automates this podcast because I can't speak. The AI voice assistant automates speech recognition in restaurants and can be used in drive-thrus, kiosks, pay at tables, systems, and other places. Apparently, it has an accuracy of over 95% and improves labor productivity by as much as 3 times. So goodbye, all you 15-year-olds trying to pay for your school this trip. The conversational AI technology can greet customers, take orders, and also transfer orders to point of sale systems. So I can literally just take orders and input it into the computer.
Yeah.
Wild.
Yep. But again, it's like one of those things that makes sense. Like with COVID, it just had to make everybody think differently. Like how can we limit our contact with people, things like that. But we'll, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, we were eating at Grilled, I think it was, and you literally scanned a QR code on the table, ordered through the app, paid through the app, and they bring it out. You don't even need to go up to the desk anymore and order food. So there's already little things like that in place already. That have like a combination of, just ordering through the app and pick up, or whether it's like you can order pick up through like Uber Eats as well.
So replacing the order taker is one thing.
Yes.
Replacing the chef is a different thing.
Yeah, that would be. But again, if you're in like a fast food restaurant where you serve like the same thing and it's like, and you've seen how McDonald's have their setup, you can look through the back and they have like just people in a row, pass it along, do the thing, pass it along.
Very strategic.
Very, very strategic. And yeah, you could totally tell they could probably replace that with some sort of robots.
Yeah. So my point is, it depends on the type of restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So what restaurant, you need the human touch and some, like we just talked previously about customer experience,
mm-hmm.
fast gratification. It depends on the business at the end of the day.
Yeah.
McDonald's, you can get away with it. No one's going there for a friendly customer experience.
They're after a quick bad meal just to like, some salty chips, you know, just to get out of the way and a little bit of a Coke.
We got some salty chips listening to this episode.
Yeah. But then if you have like those sit down restaurants, you can't see it there because they're about, like Guzman, for example, they have the music playing. They've got like the colors and the vibe and, well, they used to. I mean, they used to. Yeah.
But like, that's what I mean. There's got to be.
But they wouldn't be able to have that
thing.
There's
got to be a line in the sand mm-hmm. of like, they're a fast food restaurant. They can do it all automated.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have the music, but it's not adding that much.
No. Or you do a different one. And, you know, in Back to the Future where he goes into the cafe and it's like the person on the TV screen takes the order for them.
I don't remember that. I've got to rewatch that.
It was like a president or something on the screen.
Okay.
Yeah, and it takes his drink order and fills up his drink order and
why
then goes
the
back to flipping.
Because he chose it as the president?
I think so. I think it had like different celebrities on like the little TV screen.
It's like your GPS where you can choose like Russell Crowe to read
your
directions.
Yeah, exactly. But it was like, you know, takes your order, makes your drink, makes your food, brings it out, and it's all just like one.
That'd be interesting. You know, deep fakes.
Mm-hmm.
If You know how there's also, I've just gone way off track here. You know, what's that app where the celebrities and stuff do like shout outs for your birthday or whatever?
Oh, far out.
What's that called?
I know what it's called. I can't remember what it's called now.
Anyway, don't worry about Googling it. Shouldn't even have to Google it. We should be able to remember. Our brains are better than one.
Yeah. Far out. Like, it's a shout out app, but I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah, basically you pay a celebrity to be like, happy birthday, Sarah, because she's a favorite celebrity.
Yeah.
That's a bad idea. Bad idea. Rewind 2 minutes. I was just thinking, like, what if Macca's paid certain celebrities to create deep fakes of them almost? So right. Then you could choose them. Like, obviously, when you go to get a...
Like a brand deal.
Yeah, a brand deal. That's a simplified way of doing it. But I guess it wouldn't have to be a deep fake because you'd be paying them anyway.
Yeah.
Bad logic. It'd just be like a script.
It'd be like in a video game. You know how they pay celebrities and just a script that you read. It'd be like, you hurt me. But it'd be like...
It has to be more interactive, though. Because what if you're like... He's like, want chips with that? And you're like, nah, Russell Crowe, I don't want chips with that. And he's like, you don't want chips? Oh, no worries. I don't mind chips every now and then. Like, it has to be some sort of personalization to it. I don't know, maybe I'm thinking way too far into the future, but it depends on the business, right?
100% it does, and like what they want out of their clientele, what they want to project as a company.
So we're just looking at it from a McDonald's and fast food standpoint though,
yeah,
right?
Because we can see that's where it could work first up, like, yeah, initially
simple.
Yeah, 100%.
But yeah, I guess one of the main concerns would be, like I said, the risk of losing those low entry level jobs. Like, what are people going to do? Like, universities, it's hard to get a job out of them, realistically. You go there and learn a bunch, or you remember how to answer tests really well, but the job market's not great afterwards.
But the world is always constantly pivoting anyway. So, like, one of those prime or premium examples is the building cars. You know how they all got replaced by automation as well. Yeah. So, you know, there was a big change. I know this happened years and years ago.
I'd rather a machine make my car than a human make my car.
Yeah, no, that, like, I know what you mean with that, but I'm just saying, like, it's something that the world has always, now in the last, like, what, 50 years or so, it's something that the world has to constantly, like, adapt to and change to. Because whether it's, you know, for example, Woolies having the self-serve checkouts, when, you know, you'd go in there as a kid and there'd be someone at each single register, you'd have like 20 people sort of working. Now there's only like a handful. Like, it's constantly slowly happening over time, and before we know it, it's just all going to be robots.
Very, very few jobs will be unreplaceable.
Yeah. I think.
And what's crazy as well, right now, we're talking about the Great Resignation that happened sort of last year in 2020 as well in the US, and it's going to start happening here in 2022. Is everyone's realizing, fuck working for the man. I can figure out my own thing. I can try and create my own lane to go down, create my own future, my own destiny, and everyone's going to start leaving their jobs and be, you know, trying to chase some sort of self-employed venture, which is going to be interesting. It's going to sort of, they're going to facilitate each other. If people are going to realize, why am I even here? You're going to send me home and lock me down for months and months, then force me to get a vaccine. And then you're basically telling me my job's going to be redundant in the next 5 years due to automation anyway. People are just going to start leaving their jobs, and they're doing it already as it is. And it's just another way, another reason for them to validate that reasoning.
Yeah. So, like, it definitely makes sense. Like, if it's, and again, I know I keep saying it, but like, COVID has just changed the way that people think. So they're focusing more on themselves, like what they need out of life, because with everything being locked down and the world changing so fast, it just makes you rethink everything. And they're like, is this 9-to-5 really worth it? Like, I'm working for this other person and yes, I'm getting an income, but is it really making me happy? Like, what is there more to life than just this standard, you know, operation that we have to do, you know, to pay taxes and all that kind of thing? Like, it's just, yeah, definitely making people rethink the value in what it is and what you get out of life.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. Like I said, like, most jobs are going to be replaceable, right? And I guess waste disposal. Man, I'm really struggling for my English today. What is it?
Just
what
the
did
titles.
We do? Did we have too many coffees or not enough coffees, or am I... Do I need like a bigger lunch? What's going on?
I don't know. I think because you worked out and we've been talking like nonstop today in general. Right. Usually when we do our pod, it's like first thing in the morning and we haven't really spoken that much.
I think this year's goal is speech therapy.
Or just getting better at storytelling, I think, will be one of Because I'm
we're doing the best.
You're better than me, but
stop,
also
we're not oblivious to it. We know we're not the greatest communicators.
We're getting better at it, but I think because we haven't recorded a pod in a while as well, we're doing it weekly, so we're a bit rusty.
Blaming on the hiatus.
Yeah. But we did do a video the other day, and we got into the swing of things
Could be for my diaphragm or
diaphragm.
Yeah.
You were hunched over. Is that why?
It's just couch. I just blame it on the couch.
You know what? Because this microphone stand broke, so you're a little bit out of sorts.
I am a bit frustrated by it, but I'm not going to let it overcome me.
No. There's more things to... What did you do to me? You made me
curse you.
Yeah, there's more to life than a broken microphone stand.
All right, we're also going to talk about waste collection. Could it grind to a halt?
Could it?
COVID staff shortages have forcing delays in Melbourne's waste collection. So, again, Omicron, rampant right now. I think it's probably affecting- a bit of Delta. Fuck, man. This is bad. Sorry for the listeners. We're giving out some news and some info and some insights, but the English ain't so great. Anyway, everyone knows that Omicron's spread all over the place at the moment. Mm-hmm. I believe there's a bunch of Delta going around as well. It's hard to get any, you don't get that sort of data.
Gotcha.
So it's hard to tell, but we're not scientists.
Mm-hmm.
I technically am, but not in this area of expertise.
Your food science.
Rubbish collection has been delayed in some Melbourne municipalities due to COVID-19 staff shortages, as the waste industry warns services could grind to a halt if collectors who are deemed close contacts are not allowed to work. Moreland and Monash councils have both reported delays of up to 24 hours of garbage recycling and organics collection, as the waste sector says almost one third of staff are isolating at any time. That's is an article from last week, so hopefully I think they've implemented a few new changes in terms of
restrictions and
how fast you can go back to work.
Yes.
But yeah, it's still concerning. Can waste collection be automated? For sure, in 10 years, you're going to have some sort of Tesla waste disposal unit that can just drive around and empty bins.
Yeah.
That's obvious. But I guess the main concern now is how fragile and vulnerable a lot of these services are. The Woolies are all empty.
Mm-hmm.
Staff shortages at every level of supply chain because everyone's hibernating or isolating, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. Like Australia is so huge on whether it's trade, things like that. And because we have such a big country, we rely heavily on getting a lot of our fresh produce or just goods via truck and via transport.
Yeah.
And if we have, and how, you know, contagious Omicron is and how many people are in quarantine and then having to like ISO, I think it was like initially like 11 to 10 days or something like that. No, it was like 14 days. And I think they've now decreased it to like 10 days. And then they've also limited the time of who's considered a close contact as well. So you need to have like 4 hours of exposure to be considered like a close contact.
And it should be stated, these were new public health orders that were implemented probably over a week ago, and they do change nearly every 2 days.
It's
hard to keep on top of. But I guess the main thing is is everyone going to start panic buying again? I think Woolies are putting a lot of limits on the amount of products you can get.
Mm-hmm.
Two eggs, maybe like two cans of such item.
Yeah.
And we're going to be, are we entering a depression? A recession? Both?
There could be. I know you've been saying we're due for like a recession soon because it's been a while. People are semi-panic buying, so you do see the pastas and the rice and the toilet paper and stuff gone, but I have a feeling people have been like semi-keeping a higher stock of their own stuff anyway in general. Like, we're usually pretty good, or we're more like tight asses than anything. Like, when we about to do a shot, we just make sure we clear out the, you know, the cupboard and stuff first before we, you know, buy some new stuff. But yeah, like, it's the supply chain is definitely heaps affected. You really, really notice how much we rely heavily on that type of transport when we can't get it.
Yeah, everything, every product.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Australia is so large. You 100%. Might be getting fruit from all the way to North Queensland. You might be getting toilet paper from South Australia. And there's just so many barriers to entry along the whole way. But yeah, it just shows you don't have much control over the waste and the water, and it's stuff we take for granted. Like, you just put the bins out, dudes roll around, lifts it in with the arm.
Yeah.
It's empty. Like, can you even imagine 20 years ago?
No.
40 years ago?
No. Well, they didn't even 20, have
sorry,
the-
20 years ago was like too short a time frame.
I know. I was going to say like 40. Yeah, 60 years. Before the red, yellow, green bins. Sorry for those that aren't listening from New South Wales. We have up here in New South Wales, we've got like three types of bins and stuff that got introduced, I think, like 20 years ago anyway. But yeah, like they had no waste management, like it all was going to landfill. People didn't really know what the environmental impacts were. Well, they did know some, but yeah, it's only in the last like what, 20 years, people sort of realized how bad landfill is and all that kind of stuff to the environment. Yeah. But you can imagine in the future, yeah, self-driving trucks, and then all your bins would have like a chip or something on it that they just have to scan, you know, registers your bin. Maybe it will be able to, Big Brother style, and be able to like scan everything that's in your bin and let you know when something's not meant to be in landfill.
Or they start limiting like even how much waste you can the government will dispose for you, and you have to figure it out the rest on your own.
Yeah, like if you're not using the right recycling, like all that kind of thing. If that's how, because the world's getting pretty bad climate-wise.
We do pay them good taxes, though. Surely that's not a thing. Maybe I'm just...
Well, it depends on the area you're in as well. So, if you're in a wealthier area, you're going to have better community services. But if you're in a if you're in a less wealthy area, your community services are going to be pretty poor most of the time. So yeah, again, it's based on that as well. It can be quite biased.
On the plus side, when the supply chain's affected and you can't buy anything from the shops, means there's less waste to even pick up.
That's true.
So it could be a win-win for everyone. We'll have to do the shower butt wipes and grow our own vegetables. Maybe that's the solution for everything.
Shower butt wipes and grow own vegetables.
Thinking outside the box.
Well, there could be a water shortage. Who knows?
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem. Far out. That'd be crazy.
That's one of the big things I've been listening to, this finance guy who's like sort of into finance, but he's also talking about like global resources a lot. And I think water is going to be one of these talking points for over the next decade or two, in terms of how little there really is going to be in the future, and how much we just disregard its impact and how crucial it is.
Yeah, I like to think Australia is quite conscious of water consumption anyway, because we get severely affected by droughts and things like that as well. Because I just remember they do like quite a few of those campaigns of make sure you have shorter showers. And there was, remember the watering the front lawn or watering your garden restrictions?
I feel like it was during
bushfire season. No, it was a recent one as well.
But I remember it wasn't that big a deal in like early 2000s. It was kind of a thing, like no watering plants and stuff.
And brushing your teeth stuff. Yeah.
But that was before there was any serious climate change talk. That was just pure water shortages.
It was. Yeah. I think dams and everything were really low. So, yeah, the Murray River was low.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I like to think Australia's quite conscious. Like, if they need to do some sort of, like, water initiative, I think they would be able to get on board pretty easy. Yeah. Something that we're used to. I mean, we're used to having that kind of stuff happen all the time, whether it's, bushfires, floods. Yeah.
Tsunami
as well.
Speaking of natural disasters, another topic we wanted to talk about today was climate crisis. Last 7 years have been the hottest on record, 2021 data show. So, in the last 7 years, the last 7 years were the world's hottest on record, with the first analysis of global temperature in 2021 showing it was 1.2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial times.
Scary.
They also found carbon dioxide in the atmosphere reached record levels, and that the potent greenhouse gas methane surged very substantially, also to a new record. This means more heat is being trapped than ever, but 2021 ranked as the fifth hottest year on record. The head of Earth Observation for the European Commission said the 2021 analysis is a reminder of the continued increase in global temperatures and the urgent necessity to act. The Copernicus data shows 21 of the 22 hottest years have come since the year 2000.
Oh, man.
21 of the last 22.
Far
sorry.
Out.
2020. Fucking hell. 21 of the 20. 21?
Yeah, 21.
Of the 22 hottest years?
Yes.
Have been since 2000.
Far out.
So only 1 year.
Yep.
Was before 2000. Far out. Hot in the top 22. Yeah.
And they're saying La Nina is actually cooling down a little bit. That's why it's only the fifth hottest year this year, right, rather than being like the hottest, just because we've got La Nina coming through and cooling down the atmosphere that tiny bit that so I was like reading
stocks.
Into.
The stocks are rising, and there's like a little dip.
Little dip, and then it just going to go back up again. Fuck. Yeah, I know.
Not good.
No. Like it's, and there's multiple countries as well recording that it's the hottest time. Like yeah. Whether it's China, like it's Copernicus. All over the world. Pardon?
Copernicus Act is probably correct.
Copernicus?
Science. That's what the Copernicus. It says Copernicus starter.
Yeah, it's makes like, sense.
It's probably just a
yeah.
You don't even know what it is.
No, I don't. You're the science person.
It's probably
person.
Just a university or a journal, I'd say. But yeah, it's scary. Not scary, because, well, it is scary, but it's also not because it's such a slow moving thing that it's hard to grasp. Like anything that's, any data that's shown over a very long term like that, you can't see a direct impact on a day-to-day basis. Yeah, it's hot today. Yeah, we have the aircon on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like it's the second year. It's not until you'd be like, it's been 20 years, bro. Like exactly. It's been 20 years of hot weather.
Well, this is what this is saying. 21 yeah. of the last 20, 21 of the 20, 20, 20
21 20, of the 22 20, years 20. Since the year 2000, it's been hot.
Been pretty hot.
Pretty hot.
They should just write, it's been pretty fucking hot since the year 2000.
Yeah, it's obviously wasn't written by an Aussie, mate. it's been hot. But not only that, like it's, yes, it's been hot, but the weather itself has been crazy. So you had like wildfires all over Italy, Greece and Turkey. In California, they had the crazy fires. I mean, we had our crazy bushfires like 2 years ago. You know, there's the crazy floods over in Germany. I think, was it? I mean, Australia has like literally all the weather that's across the world.
Do we?
In it. Yeah, we have floods, we have bushfires, we have droughts, like.
Do we have ice sheets?
Pro, no. No, so we don't have that cold weather, but we do apparently have tornadoes now, so.
Do we?
Yeah, no, we do have tornadoes.
We call them something different though, don't we?
No, there's two types. There's hurricanes and tornadoes. They're two different types.
Whirly-whirly.
Whirly-whirlies. That's like in the glass where you like shake it around, no, or like a beaker.
I think a whirly-whirly is a water one. Is one on water.
Oh, is it the tiny ones that you sort of see that are harmless ones?
So there's tornado.
Yeah, and there's hurricanes.
Typhoon.
Typhoon. Yeah.
Man, we should break down natural disasters one episode. Hurricane.
Tsunami.
Typhoon.
Tornado.
Yeah.
Well, some are like wind and some are like waves.
Getting confused. Man. We should just do play SimCity.
SimCity?
Yeah.
Yeah, and wait, just make natural disasters happen.
Yeah, just remember so we're not too cooked on the next episode. We try and talk about it.
But the only Sims I ever played was like Golf Sims. That no, was Sim like
City.
The demo.
Not Sims, SimCity.
SimCity.
Yeah. You're building the city, not the actual house.
Ah, no, what I was saying, like, the only Sims I ever played was, like, Golf Sims.
So, you never played SimCity?
No. No, we only had, like, demo version of Sims Golf, and I used to just make golf courses Sims with, like, landscaping and put an airport in there.
You were the problem of our generation.
Excuse me? I just didn't play many computer games.
So, the question I want to ask is, are we helpless on an individual level here? Like, can brushing our teeth for 1 minute less make an impact? Can showering a minute less make an impact? Yes, on a smaller level. Other than that and going to protests or rallies or committing yourself to volunteering one day a month or spending a day doing Clean Up Australia every year.
Or living a plant-based lifestyle as well.
How much difference does it going to make when there's 9 billion people on the planet?
Well, if everybody has that mentality, be like, what's one person going to make a difference? I'm not even going to try. Then no one's going to even try. So it's about that 1% or that one person that wants to make a difference. Because if everybody has that mentality,
so
then
what percent matters? Like, what percent can make a difference? Because not everyone's, obviously we're in a 1% of the world.
Yeah.
We're healthy. We live here. We have good food, good income, good healthcare. Extremely lucky for where we are.
Yeah, 100%.
But you can't. People have way more pressing issues to be worried about.
That's true. Like if you're in a money situation or like a family situation,
survival,
the last thing
people can't even get clean water.
Yeah,
so they don't have any clue that any of this is happening because they're in an environment or a country that has no sort of very little news coming in.
So if it's within your means, then are you like it's a personal responsibility to make sure that you do what you can. Yeah.
So what percentage of the world can make it like can actually
Like
obviously, obviously you and I are going to have an answer. It's more of a theoretical discussion.
Well, if anything, like how much of a percentage of something do you really start noticing? Is it 20%, 30%? Yeah. Like that 20, when you start getting to that quarter, so that 25% sort of thing. Yeah. It's like when you sort of start seeing the momentum happen. So just 20% of the world on board to change the climate? No. Yeah. For those that are only listening, Drew's just like shaking his head.
Very optimistic.
Yeah. But like that's what it comes to, this kind of thing. You have to be like all we can do at like a personal level is create awareness and do our part.
But the cool thing is that not everyone has to have the same approach.
No.
Everyone can, there can be 20% that will have a different approach.
Yeah. Whether it's driving an electric vehicle or 100%. Like people can have their own different ways of contributing to lessening their footprint on the environment. But it's pretty scary though. The last, 7 years have been the hottest. Like it's pretty full on if you think about it, with all the crazy stuff going on in the world, and then reading about the tsunami this morning.
Yeah, so the Tonga tsunami was crazy. So tsunami floods streets and cuts communication after undersea volcano erupts. And again, it's very early news here in Australia. It is, Sunday, and it only happened this morning. An undersea volcano erupted on Saturday near the Pacific nation of Tonga, sending tsunami waves crashing across the shore and people rushing to higher ground. Tsunami advisories were issued for other Pacific islands, the Australian East Coast, Hawaii, Alaska, and the US Pacific Coast. So it's right in the middle of the ocean, Australia and America on sort of other side, and obviously all those very vulnerable Pacific islands scattered throughout. There are no immediate injuries or reports on the extent of the damage, because all internet connectivity with Tonga was lost at about 6:40. So there's a huge underground internet pipeline, same as that gets to Australia, and it was basically destroyed in the eruption. So there's no information coming in or out. There's a few scenes and stuff from people's iPhones and live streams that are online of some shockwaves that you can see. But right now, there's no internet in or out of there. So people, if they are safe or did get to higher ground, have composed or respond or let anyone know of the status.
Far out.
So it could be, and I imagine it's really, really horrible there at the moment. On Tonga, home of about 105,000 people, video posted on social media showing large waves washing ashore in coastal areas. Satellite images showed a huge eruption with a plume of ash, steam, and gas rising like a mushroom above the blue Pacific waters. Yeah, the scenes were absolutely crazy.
Especially those aerial footage of the volcano going off. It's like it looks like this huge mushroom cloud going off. And before we were recording this episode, it was just on the news before New Zealand were like, yes, we're keeping an eye on it. No, we haven't had any contact yet. And the airspace is actually not safe enough for them to fly over to even see if they're safe or not.
Military vessels in.
Yeah, well, that's what they're even sussing that out. They're not even sure if they can actually get vessels in just yet. So they were in the process of sussing out to see if they actually can get vessels to the island, but they can't even fly over. So I wonder if they probably can't even get, because there'll be heaps of smoke and cloud and dust over it, right? Would they be able to get like aerial satellite footage or drone footage? No, they wouldn't even be able to get a drone out there because it'd be too far.
I have no idea how far away it is from the next major sort of island.
Yeah, and they would have some military vessels off-site as well, as most, countries do for security and precautionary reasons. So I think that's what they're trying to do at the moment, is get some of those military vessels. But at the moment, New Zealand's just like, we don't know.
Which country is the closest?
It'd be New Zealand is the closest to Tonga, I'm pretty sure.
Really?
Yeah, so New Zealand are waiting. Obviously, Australia are waiting as well, because we always help out our friends across the ocean. So it's just a bit of a waiting game. I think they just need to know it's safe to be able to send people out at the moment. So right.
Yeah, if you can't send any air support in, all you can really do. Wow, Tonga's not that far away, hey.
No, it's
New Zealand is super, we're pretty same distance, like Sydney, Queensland.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then we're probably the US is we're probably a third of the way, and then US is probably twice as far away. But yeah, wow.
Yeah, so we're like, our military is just
Fiji's
waiting aside.
Right next to it.
Yeah. Oof. I think Fiji are also waiting, but yeah, it's everyone's just waiting to see until they can sort of send help and stuff over. Like, it's Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
I was saying, how crazy would it be if it just sets off a whole sequence of events? Like, I'm not by any means an expert or have any knowledge in
tectonic plates
and geology and stuff like that. But imagine if it, like, can it just set off other ones, like nearby ones?
Like the shockwaves are like disrupting.
Yeah. If there's something that's like 80% of the way there for busting through and having its own eruption, and like surely that could happen.
Well, wasn't there a volcano disruption? Yeah, in Indonesia not long ago, I think it was. Like, did that affect the one near Tonga? Or is it just its time? Or is it just because, you know how they're saying like volcanoes go off every certain amount of like hundreds and hundreds of years? Like, you know how not many volcanoes, as far as I know, haven't gone off. So maybe it's that time in the world that things are starting to shift. The alarm clock went off. Yeah, so the alarm clock went off, so it's just going to be a year of fires and earthquakes and volcanoes and, you know, it would make sense. We're just, you know, ready for it right now.
it's crazy, and I don't think there's going to be much good news coming out of there, unfortunately.
No, but yeah, so Sydney closed all their beaches and stuff in preparation. I think the warning's been downgraded, which is good. It's just more of a precautionary thing at the moment, yeah.
All right. If anyone is... as any relatives or loved ones in Tonga, hopefully everything is all good. We're sending our thoughts and stuff. It's definitely the last thing anyone needs at this time of the height human of existence.
I know. I just hope, yeah, everyone's loved ones are okay and they're safe and we can touch base with that island soon and make sure everyone's all right.
It's underwater though, right? So how would you even know? Like, would they even know it was there? Like, obviously, like...
I'm pretty
sure scientists would, but would like the people from Tonga even like be aware that like that's even a thing?
Well, I don't know. It was the what movie was it that we're watching the other day? What was it? Shit. It was with Leonardo DiCaprio, and it had Jennifer Lawrence in it. Don't Look Up. So yeah. with the meteor and stuff, and you know how they were like seeing those. Like it was a no. Actually. No, Dante's Inferno. That's what we're watching with Pierce Brosnan, right? And then he was like noticing the shift in the tectonic plates. And he was going out to investigate. So I'm assuming there would be some sort of scientist like that would investigate. This
movie. Which
so Dante's, the Dante's Inferno. Dante's Peak. Dante's Peak.
What is it?
Dante's Peak with the big volcano, and the nan goes in, and her legs all get burnt up. Oh, that's up right. Yeah, that's stuff.
Better. I remember pressing play, and then I've just lost the entire premise of the movie.
Yeah.
So he was like going against the orders and knew something was up.
Yeah, because he was reading the signs and stuff. Yeah, so I'm assuming there are scientists out there that keep an eye on active volcanoes.
Yeah, of course.
And yeah, so they would have definitely the country would have known if it was that close and could affect them. They would know a volcano was nearby, but I don't know if they would have known.
I don't think they got any notice.
Yeah, like if it just like was it just an eruption all of a sudden. Imagine hearing those alarms go off. The woo, it'd be crazy.
Apparently it's very I don't think there's much in the way of high areas to like get up to in terms of mountains.
It's a relatively flat island.
Okay. I believe.
All right, well, I hope everyone's okay. Yeah. That's the big thing.
All right, moving on to some local news. A bit disappointing. Hillsong escapes fine after denying that their youth camp with dancing and singing was a festival. So the Hillsong Church will not be fined by police over a New South Wales youth camp where congregants were filmed singing and dancing despite the state health minister saying the event was in breach of public health orders. So up near Newcastle, they had a big event, religious gathering event, and it was just a music festival. They were literally playing turned down for what they had. You know, teens and kids in their early 20s on each other's shoulders, dancing and partying. Clearly, look at the footage. It's a music festival hidden with some religious components and talks and stuff like that. They're not really fooling anyone. The church apologized on Friday after footage of its annual youth summer camp provoked widespread outrage amid the state's current COVID case numbers. New South Wales police said officers had attended the event and spoken with organizers but would not be issued a fine. The church continued to deny that the camp had any similarity to music festivals, which are banned both indoors and outdoors until January 27 here in New South Wales. Religious services are exempt, but footage of maskless congregants dancing to pop music at the camp has angered many at a time when festivals and concerts are being cancelled. So just, I think, 2 or 3 days beforehand, a bunch of Australia's main music festivals were cancelled.
100%.
Due to this new public health order of No music festivals with singing and dancing due to Omicron spread until the end of January, when they think the peak or the height of this wave will be over. These dickheads go and do this.
I know. What a big slap in the face to all those people whose livelihoods, whose complete careers.
Actual artists. This is just a DJ.
I know. Paid by Hillsong. And religious cover bands and stuff as well. Like, it's just such a slap in the face because their livelihoods are affected, you know. And they do such good things. Like, they do those, you know, free concerts for bushfires and all those charities and stuff like that.
They bring local tourism to every town, to Wollongong, where I'm from. You know, they bring bands down and do small festivals. They go to Wagga Wagga, bands, like all these small touring bands and artists. Yeah, a lot of them might do big arena shows, but a lot of them are also supported by local pubs and clubs, which just funds and puts money back into smaller businesses, remote communities.
Yeah. And it's just like, because you're branded as a youth camp and you have, you know, actor activities and everything like that, you can sort of get away with it. But yeah, look at the footage and people's accounts and stuff like that. They're like, yes, it might have been a youth camp to begin with, but their evening activities is 100% a music concert, a music activity, music gathering. People are like super close to each other, singing, dancing, raising their arms. Like, just because, yes, people have the right to, you know, be religious and celebrate their religion and things like that. But if you're blatantly discarding the rules and can get away with it, that's just a really frustrating part, because they're putting so many people at risk. And then you, like we're saying, you have people's careers affected by this with the shutdown.
Yeah.
And you turn around a couple of days, you see this, and they don't get any fines whatsoever. Like, it's not cool.
It's one thing for the organizers to get away with it. Not only do they get literally tens of millions of dollars donated to them by the government and not taxed pretty much any of it.
Yeah.
They can hold an event like this where they're probably charging $200 a pop a day for these kids to come. And again, probably know a little tax.
Yeah.
And then they don't get fined. The reason they don't get fined is because Scott Morrison is known. There's plenty of footage of him out there at Hillsong.
Mm-hmm.
He's definitely a member of the church.
Yeah.
As well as New South Wales Police Commissioner Mick Fuller is also a known member of it. So it's just corruption to the nth degree to cover religion.
Uh-huh.
And again, the Hillsong donates to the Liberal Party as well. So it's just backhand deals, donations back and forth, cover our ass, we'll cover yours. It's complete bullshit, because, like, if you look back in August during the Delta wave, there was a Blacktown church that had 60 people rock up to for their commune.
Yeah.
It was commune or the congregation.
Congregation,
And at the time, this was Delta wave, right? When every LGA was, like, locked down independently.
Gotcha.
And we were having 300 cases a day, that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, more deadly disease compared to the current wave of Omicron.
Yeah.
But they were fined $50,000. There were 60 people that went, roughly, and they were all fined about $500 to $1,000 each.
And Hillsong didn't get anything.
Exactly. And this is when pretty much, so that was when, you know, there was hotspots, like hot LGA hotspots.
That's
when
we were like proper lockdown.
New South Wales is basically an entire hotspot at the moment. There's 30,000 to 50,000 new cases a day.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that there's not a single dollar being fined for Hillsong is just disgusting.
It's ridiculous.
And it just shows to show who's in control of this country. And yeah, New South Wales police is just as bad. Like, they cover all this shit up, and it's disgusting to me. Not only that, they were giving out free rat tests. Where are they getting these rat tests from? Like, obviously they might have paid for them legit, but like, would you be surprised if they just got some backdoor low price deal from the government?
Yeah.
To give out rat tests to the kids that are going to this festival.
I don't know, because, like, I know some companies are able to, like, get some for their employees and things like that, but, like, that's for, like, businesses to stay open, not for
kids
for you to have
a
music festival. Yeah.
It's gross, man.
Like, it
sickens me.
Yeah, I know. It's just double standards. Like I was saying, it's just such a slap in the face for those artists who's just recently had, it was the Hunter Valley concert that just recently got closed down. Like, it's mental. What are they meant to be doing? And you see these kids bloody doing shoeies with water. Like,
they're literally doing a shoeie with water.
I know.
Fucking idiots, man.
I know. But it's just awful. Like, because we're, you know, I like to think that we're, you know, try to be, well, like, good citizens and stuff like that. And then, you know, religion's meant to be for everybody, and it's meant to be supportive and meant to be good in general. And here they are.
A straight profit.
I know.
Like someone on Twitter wrote something interesting. There's a couple of memes and stuff.
They're a business.
But if they had all these leftover rat tests after they were told to shut down, donate them to a community that needs them. Donate 100%. Them to a hospital. Donate them to people that actually need these rat tests, not your kids that are there to party.
No.
And then another meme was like, you know, they compared Hillsong to what's the main church guy that was on ABC a lot with John Safran? Father John
O'Reilly?
Was that his name?
Oh, Flannelly or something?
One of the main guys on the radio all the time.
Yeah.
Like gives back a ton to the community and church and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And Hillsong do nothing. It's just all profit. It's bullshit. Like if you dig deep enough, they're known for heaps of dodgy stuff. I'm not going to get into it here. But yeah, Hillsong, not even a slap on the wrist, not even a slap on the wrist, completely off the hook.
I know. When you hear more bad news than good news, something's not going right, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Government, heaps corrupt.
Yeah.
Rat tests, let's just give them to Harvey Norman. Harvey Norman, mark
Chemist
it up.
Chemist Warehouse.
Yeah. Harvey Norman, mark up the rat test and then make sure you donate more again for our next round of... for the run of PM, like, because there's going to be an election soon. They need donors.
Yeah.
They're going to keep their donors happy, right?
Yeah. So what? So Hillsong and Chemist Warehouse Group. Like it's...
Harvey Norman.
Oh, man.
Anyway, let's move on to some good news articles and we'll get out of here. Well, this is not so good, but an interesting one.
It's almost like, it's a read into it and then, yeah.
Yep. Alleged Wordle copycats criticized for monetizing free game. I'm guessing you're probably wondering what the hell Wordle is.
I never heard of it until you'd be like, oh, this is an interesting one.
Yeah, so been on Twitter a bunch over the last little bit. I think since lockdown here in like August, September, and I was doing a lot of NFT research.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you were deep into the Twitter space.
Been on Twitter quite a bit since then. And recently, everyone's been posting these weird little blocks of color.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, you know how you can do emojis with different shapes and stuff, and there's just some shapes that are just like a plain yellow box, plain blue box.
Yeah.
There's some kind of word game that you use colored blocks or emojis to like represent the word. I'm not sure how it works, but I seen this article and it was pretty interesting, right? So created by software engineer Josh Wardle, the brain teaser app Wordle, I guess capitalizing on his surname there.
Yeah.
Skyrocketed in popularity earlier this year, blooming from just 90 daily players in November to now more than 2 million.
That's a crazy number.
To 2 million in 2 months.
That's a crazy number.
Nuts.
It's nuts.
Absolutely nuts. Wait till you hear the rest of it, though.
Yeah, okay.
Because this guy's probably going to be broke forever. The game is housed exclusively in a web browser, right? So just on a web browser. But a host of apps have attempted to capitalize on Wordle's popularity and soon sprang up with names like What Word, Wordle, Wordus, and Wordle 3D. So basically, the game is just in browser. You just type in wordle.com or whatever it is.
Yep.
But they realized, all these scammers realized, it's not on the App Store. I can trick people into creating the exact same game, rename it, and then charge a fee on top, right?
Well, as opposed to that one guy that called it the same thing in the App Store.
Oh, you took me off track here, Sarah. Yeah, so in one example titled Wordle the App, so they literally just wrote the app afterwards, users were offered a free trial as well as a $30 annual subscription from a premium tier version. The developer bragged on Twitter that about monetizing the game, which is completely free, before it was later taken down. So this dummy has gone online and been like,
and bragged her at it.
Just cleaned out 100K due to these dummies paying for this. So dummies making money off dummies. Very interesting times. Many copycats have since been removed from the App Store, though not before users took to social media to lament the murkiness of copyright laws. So there's no actual copyright around
apps.
The type of game, like the way the game was made, right?
Right.
Others pointed out that Wordle itself seems to draw inspiration from other language puzzles, including the American TV show Lingo, which also featured a five-letter guessing game. So it's basically like sort of like a Sudoku with like five-letter words, and you get six tries to guess a five-letter word, and it creates like a little puzzle, and you have to like solve it. And then people jump onto Twitter and post like their answers, if that makes sense.
Gotcha.
So interesting that you can just steal someone's idea and then cash in on it. Obviously, a lot of these apps were taken down, but it goes to show how crafty a lot of these game designers and stuff are.
Mm-hmm.
If you know how to code a basic game like that, no. and you can see a window, you can go for it.
Yes.
But a lot of them were taken down, so I don't know what legal terms held up that allowed the main guy to like keep...
Mm-hmm.
keep his initial brand and have the other ones taken down if it wasn't copyrighted. So
yeah. Well, yeah. I think from what I was reading that because he decided to make his free, it was the social media presence behind it that really caused those copycats to be taken down. So because he's like, oh, I see all these copycats, I'm going to keep mine free for everybody. So it's the people that were fans were like, oh, this is a fake one, this is a copycat. So it was the rallying, so the community that he built behind it was
just reported it.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So they're the ones that really took those ones down. But also you had, like you're saying on Twitter, like all these people that made copies were just bragging that they made copies of it. Yeah. Or they were just like, oh, mine's slightly different. It's got 4 instead of 5, and or you can do up to 7.
Right.
Yeah. But also this person copied this TV show. So like saying, yes, I copied, but they also copied someone else.
Well, how many different versions of Candy Crush are there?
So many different versions. All like you have bejeweled. To do is
change the type of item
mm-hmm.
and change the type of scoring system to a degree.
Yeah.
It can be pretty much redesign any game.
Yeah. Well, he pretty much just made it for his partner for like a ultimate brain teaser or a puzzling game. So I don't think he really minds. It's a
very nice partner to be developing games like that.
Well, he's a software engineer, so it's probably like took him 2 seconds to, not 2 seconds, well, but it's probably relatively.
Hopefully he made some money on it.
Yeah. Well, he said he's charging for free. So I don't know. So maybe people donated to his cause or he has like a Patreon or something.
This is the thing. When you get bad news like this, although it's not him creating the bad negativity
mm-hmm.
or the bad news, because these other greedy people are in there, it's putting more users onto the original Wordle, which yeah. is going to just fuel his success and success of himself and
yeah.
and the game even more. So it's actually a huge benefit to him.
Yeah, I should have gone on into the website before we did this one, but I wonder if he's got like ads and stuff on his website so he has the like the click-through rate. So if he has exactly. these people clicking, then he's getting some sort of income.
I'm sure he's probably had a bunch. I mean, if you've gone from 90, what is it, 90?
It was 90 a day.
To 2 million. Like, you're going to have people reaching out to you for ad space and stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, if you got someone copying everything you do, that's just kind of, it's like flattery, right?
Mm-hmm.
Imitation, what's that, what do they say?
Imitation creates, like, flattery creates imitation.
Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, so flattery leads to imitation, I'm pretty sure. Something along the lines that of
just,
that.
Doesn't sound right.
No, but that's what it is. Like, people, if people like it and enjoy it, they want to mimic it or copy it or make their own version.
Right.
Yeah, because they really enjoy it and want to make it themselves type of thing.
Fair enough. But if they didn't try and make a better version, then it's kind of like, why bother?
Mm.
It's just like laziness, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Silly.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's pretty much it. Let's wrap on to our good news article of the week. I'm guessing I'm going to turn this into a regular segment just to round out the episode. Give some a breathing room.
Yeah, and it wasn't easy. Sometimes it's not easy to find a good news article. We're going through and be like, oh, that's not really good news. But we found like this really cute, adorable one. But I think that's very, very appropriate for our Aussie listeners out there.
Beautiful way to round off the episode.
Mm-hmm.
So an album of endangered bird songs, Australian endangered bird songs, soars above Taylor Swift to number 3 on the music chart. Bit random.
Super random.
But a lovely little tale. I mean, mm-hmm. Taylor Swift, she goes all right. She's been in number 1 spot plenty of times.
She doesn't need it.
No one's denying her abilities and her mm-hmm. talents. Just move over for a second.
Yeah,
just
I know.
Get out of here. An album of Australia's most endangered birds and their cause has sold its way into the number 3 spot on national pop charts, beating Taylor Swift and ABBA.
Mm-hmm.
Songs of Disappearance is a 24-minute album of endangered bird cause recorded by Australia's best wildlife sound recordist, David Stewart. Good on you, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
It sold over 2,000 copies with all proceeds going to conservation of our feathered friends via BirdLife Australia. The LP just became available internationally. With each CD comes a copy of the 2022... Oh, sorry. Let me fucking start this again. I'm ruining the good news
story. That's all right.
The LP just became available internationally. With each CD comes a copy of the 2020 Action Plan for Australian Birds and a small guide to each bird and how to pick the sound of their calls.
Super adorable album.
So
but like,
weird.
Yeah, it's so random. But I was reading, because as much as like we rag on like magpies and like bin chickens and all that kind of stuff. Like,
are they in there?
No, they're not in there. I'm just saying, but like as much as we like rag on like our Australian birds, like when it comes to endangered species, well, I like to think that when it comes to endangered species, we sort of like want to make sure that we look after them. So whether it's, you know, the koala's been affected by the bushfires, things like that. But
can you do a koala? Sorry, side note, can you do a koala sound for
me? Isn't it like a screech?
No, I'm pretty sure I know what it is, but I want you to just clarify what it sounds like.
No, I'm pretty sure it's a screech and I'm not going to hurt listeners' ears with it. But... 1 in 6 are threatened. So 1 in 6 Australian native birds are threatened, which is pretty full on if you think about it. There's heaps.
How many do we have left? 6?
No, I'm just saying 1 in 6. Yeah, no, like a statistic. But the David, old mate Dave.
Dave-o.
He's been traveling around for 36 years, just grabbing collections of native sounds. So it's all about birds, frogs, and like mammals as well.
That's
and
an easy job. No. Sorry. No, Dave, I'm giving you full credit here.
Mm-hmm.
In comparison to bird photography.
Yeah.
It's pretty easy to just record her out and just record.
Well,
bird photography, you have to find the bird, get the shot. You can just walk through the bush with just a tape recorder, realistically.
No, because if you're walking through the bush, you're going to scare away the birds. You have to, like, be stationary with your microphone waiting for them. Because if you make a noise or if you move, they're going to fly away.
I step back. But also, I guess you have to find the endangered one as well, which is
quite
hard. You
do, which would be hard.
My cynicism coming out, I apologize.
But his work is used in museums and in science, like across the world.
Remember we went to the museum at the end of last year?
Yeah.
And a lot of those sounds, they don't come from nowhere. You have to record those sounds.
Yeah, but his work is used in science and stuff all around the world because he just goes around recording, endangered, birds and frogs and stuff.
I wonder if, sorry, I'm just like being a full capitalist.
Yeah.
Does he make money? Can he like own the rights to a particular recording? Like
he'd own the rights to his recordings of his albums 100%.
The bird's doing the work.
But he's recording it, so it's his recording.
Yeah, but a producer and an artist get different royalties, right? Like if Tupac gets recorded, Tupac gets some royalties and producer gets some royalties because there's different involvements.
Unless he produces his own stuff.
So well, I guess it's all going to charity anyway. Again, I'm going to shut up with this one.
Yeah. So it all goes to charity. His website for anybody that's interested is called naturesound.com.au.
Love it.
It's a very cute old school website. A lot of neon green on that one.
It's like GeoCities style.
Yeah. Dave-o, definitely.
We'll help you out. We'll get with a Squarespace.
Maybe
deal.
We'll send over Taylor Swift's website designer. Help him out a bit.
That's going to cost $1 million a year.
Oh, it would be so much, wouldn't it?
Would it?
It would have to be. You'd have to get... Oh, no, it would be a one and done and you just have to get someone to update it.
I don't know.
But again, very, very cute. Donates to, BirdLife Australia.
Wow. Yeah. All right. What's your takeaway from all these articles? Where's the world going between now and next week?
One is don't let make sure you have a digital space somewhere.
Digital space.
Yeah. So whether you have a business or if you've got a social presence or anything like that, just make sure you carve out some sort of digital aspect for yourself because that's just where the world is moving for sure.
In terms of a different way of supporting yourself in the future, just preparing for the future.
Yeah, so whether it's marketing or creating income, anything like that, just have like some sort of digital aspect or safety net, really.
Yeah.
Environment's gone to shit, got to do something about that.
Yeah, try and do your best to make some sort of change, no matter how small.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how small. Like it's all going to seem quite redundant to a degree and irrelevant on your day-to-day basis with these small minor tasks, but they do add up, and it is hard to see that because it's such a long-term thing.
Yeah.
And again, we're just one out of many, many billion people. So although it might not seem like it's adding up, it is, and it's also just going to create and reinforce like good habits in yourself and those around you, I guess.
Yep. Yeah, and I don't know. Watch out for the robots. They're coming for us.
Keep out for robots.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a bit of a whirlwind episode. Episode 33. Knocked it out of the park. A nice solid hour and a half.
First one back of the year. Mm-hmm. Always a lot of fun. Oh, man, it's good to be back in the podcast seat.
It is. I'm drained from talking, though.
A lot of talking.
Definitely can't do a 3-hour pod.
No.
Whew.
Oh, it's a lot of talking. Should we wrap it up?
We should wrap it up.
Yeah. All right. Well, I just wanted to say thank you so much, everybody, for listening to our first episode back of the year.
Yep.
Just want to remind everybody, if you could head on over to Apple Podcasts, drop us a review. The reviews help us out a whole bunch. Don't forget to head on over to YouTube if you like to see the video version as well. Drop a comment, drop a like, subscribe, do that thing. We also have Instagram as well on our secondary account. Mm-hmm. It's Drew and Sarah. So we've got a lot of things happening this year.
Beautiful.
Very excited for the podcast, and we'll see you next time.
All right, take it easy, guys. See ya.
Bye. See ya.